The following exposition on the Dharma was part of a longer conversation. If you enjoy this teaching, please visit beingpeacefully.com to access more of my teachings or to learn more. The interplay between contemplation and thought is going to differ based on the type of analytical meditation that you're doing. So metta meditation is an analytical meditation in the perspective that we're actually not sitting there just being with and being present. We are literally engaging the mind in thought. That in and of itself makes it a form of analytical meditation, but it's not a contemplative meditation. However, I will say this, most people who do metta meditation are doing it wrong. Of course, I'm going to say that because I say everybody's doing everything, right? So how is it that people who are doing metta meditation incorrectly, doing it wrong? They've got their script, okay? And at a very high level, they'll say, I wish these people to be happy, and I wish these people to be free from suffering. I wish myself to be happy. I wish myself to be free from suffering. I wish this person I love to be, you know, happy. I wish this person I love to be free from suffering. All the way to, you know, this person I dislike to be happy, to be free of suffering, to the world. Free of, you know, to be happy, to be free of suffering. That is not how we do metta meditation. That is basically how we iterate a script. It is how we basically are robots. Okay, I've said this and I've said that. Now on to the next person. There's nothing that we're doing there that's doing us any good. Why do we do metta meditation? I don't know why I didn't put any of this in the instructions on my metta meditation post, but I probably should go back to it. The reason we do metta meditation is to actually cultivate genuine compassion for the targets of those verses. We don't want to just be like, oh, I want to be happy and I want to be free from suffering. No, we want to actually be present, not with those words, but with the emotional understanding, with the heart, not with the mind. I want to be happy. I wish to be free of suffering. May I be happy. May I be free of suffering. And not just say the words, but may I really be happy. And what that, when we say those words, we really want to create this unbelievable, overwhelming feeling of yes. May I be happy. But knowing what is happiness, it's not eating a bag of Frito-Lays while watching Game of Thrones. Really being happy means I'm free of craving. I'm free of attachments. I'm free of resentment. I'm free of resistance. I'm free of tension. May I be free of suffering. What is suffering but craving? May I be free of the deluded mind that believes that these outside external things will create pleasure for me. May I be free of suffering. And really, we're cultivating that for ourselves. Now you, I imagine I don't get the sense that you're a strong harsh talker, that strong self-harsh talker where you don't have compassion for yourself. But when we're targeting the people that are neutrals, we're targeting people we don't like, especially people that have harmed us in the past, right? We want to stay away from politicians and people that are distant. You know, we want to stick with the people that actually have caused us harm. We really want to cultivate a true feeling of may they be happy. May they come to the true sources of happiness. May they find the Dhamma. Because if they're happy, how can they possibly create harm for others? If they're happy, how can they possibly injure other people? Speak harshly to other people if they're happy. May they be happy. May these people who have caused me harm genuinely be free of their suffering. We want to cultivate these things because not only do we want the genuinely want to apply these notions of happiness and loving kindness and equanimity with no bias for all sentient beings, even the ones who have harmed us. But when we wish those who harmed us happiness and freedom from suffering, we are allowing ourselves to let go of the pain that we experienced as a result of their harm. We're opening up our heart. And we're slowly starting to chip away at that hard shell around it that opens us up to skillful compassion that is coupled with wisdom. All right? So I'm not answering your question, but this is an important teaching on how to do metta appropriately. It should not be rote. And when we're saying these verses, don't say the same verses for all people. Because when you're targeting yourself, you know what you're experiencing you need to work on. Maybe you do feel a sense of happiness, you know? So target the things that you wish you felt more of. May I be at ease with restlessness. May I be at ease at not being included. May I, you know, include, make that your metta. You know, may I be free of the desire to be with those who aren't tagging me, you know. may I be free of the feeling of the fear of missing out. And then when you're targeting somebody who hurt you in the past, let's say they punched you, all right, may this person be free of the desire to create physical harm to others. May this person be free of the anger that causes them to lose control. So when we're giving metta recitations, it should not be the same verse for all people. Mm-hmm. We have to make it very specific, because that's how we make it personal and how we make it impactful and how we actually cultivate or realize the reason why we do metta meditation, which is to start cultivating genuine loving kindness and compassion for others. Not to have this rote recitation. All right. So metta meditation is a form of analytical meditation, but it's not a contemplative one. We're trying to cultivate a certain feeling. Contemplative analytical meditation is something like you read something, I'm literally just going to go to a highlight. So highlight, the more we get what we want, the stronger our attachment becomes. The stronger our attachment, the more difficult it is to find satisfaction. All right. So we take this sentence. Basically what it's saying, if I'm going to summarize it, is the stronger our attachment, the stronger our suffering. Right? I think that's a good way to describe that. So we sit on the cushion. The stronger our attachment, the stronger our dukkha. The stronger, so we repeat it such that we don't have to think about it. The stronger our attachment, the stronger our suffering. The stronger our suffering, the stronger our dukkha. We can start transforming it, right? But we maintain the meaning. The stronger our dukkha, the stronger our pain. The stronger our attachment, the stronger our pain. So now we've got it in our head, right? And we're sitting there. And we start thinking about, okay, how is this true? We don't live, you know, we can ask ourselves, how is this true? But we can also start reflecting on the things that, you know, something that we love that broke and we responded so negatively to it breaking. How was I attached to it? Was my pain a direct function of the amount of attachment that I had to it? A relationship that ended that really crushed me. How attached was I? Were there other relationships that ended that I didn't care about? How much of attachment did I have in those relationships? And then really starting to understand, you know? Yeah. The stronger my attachment, the stronger my experience of dukkha at its loss or its separation or its breakup. Attachment is suffering. And then we sit on this and we start reflecting, okay, where am I attached in my life today? What are the things or the concepts or the people, the objects, the notions, the ideas that I'm attached to, that I feel a strong sense of attachment to? If I didn't have these things, if these things disappeared today, what kind of suffering would I experience? If I don't get these things that I want, that I'm so attached to, what kind of experience will that be for me? Can I still have these things in my life without being so attached to them? Can I still want these things and strive for them without the strength of attachment? You know, that's contemplative analytical meditation. And that's really where the difference between a recitation meditation that uses thinking versus a recitation meditation that's meant to cultivate certain feelings and breaking down, you know, our hardness in the case of metta, or a contemplative analytical meditation where we're literally trying to think about something to gain direct insight into it, how it affects us, and how we will work with it moving forward. That's powerful contemplative meditation. And that transforms who we are as people. And that's why I say that enlightenment and stream entry comes through the contemplation of the Dharma, because this is how we rewire our mind.
Awesome. That's all very clear.
Hello, my name is Michael Turner, and I'm a Buddhist Anagarika and pre-monastic teacher of Applied Dharma. If you enjoyed this Dharma talk and would like me to be your teacher, or if you would like to be notified of new talks when they are posted, please visit my website at beingpeacefully.com to contact me, subscribe, or learn more.